You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. So today I have a very special guest. By the way, if you would like to join us, the number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Let me tell you about my guest. So as you guys know, binging, emotional eating, any kind of eating issue is not the problem. It is a solution to the problem, which often has to do with how we feel in our world. Dr. Bob Rich has dedicated his long career to helping people have healthier, happier lives. He has written many books, 19 books, including From Depression to Contentment, all of which help you re-engineer your life. When we're happy, when we're content, we don't use food for comfort or distraction from pain. And by the way, Dr. Bob is joining us all the way from Australia to be here. I am so glad that you are here. I also want to say a little bit more about you. He is a survivor of depression himself, so he knows of what he speaks. He has also retired 5 times from 5 different occupations, including psychologist. And the main remaining one, aside from writer, is professional grandfather, because he wants a future for the kids of the world and a future worth surviving. I love that. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bob Rich.
Oh, thank you, Nina. I must just say, it's not that I'm joining you from Australia, but you're joining me from Los Angeles.
See, isn't that amazing? It's all about perspective, isn't it?
I don't know how you people can... I'm sorry. I don't know how you people can walk around upside down.
And you know, it's too bad that he has no sense of humor. Carly Gash on Instagram is saying, "Hi, Dr. Bob. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here today," with a lot of nice emojis. So we're very happy that you are here. Now, I mentioned that you are a survivor of depression, as you put it. Tell us more about your experience.
Well, I was depressed at least at 5 years of age, possibly before. And part of the reason is that I was born when the bombs were falling. While my mum was squeezing me out, a shot down fighter plane crashed into the hospital building and demolished the top 3 stories. So a nurse sewed her up after I was out. No anesthetic, of course, or painkillers. That was reserved for the seriously wounded. A fellow patient helped her to dress, and then she took me and walked out. And it took her 3 hours to walk a couple of miles to get home through thick snow. This was in February in Budapest in 1943, when most of your listeners were very young. Anyway, this is one of the many reasons that one of my books, the one that was the hardest to write and the one that won the most awards, is my mother's biography.
Which, tell us the name of that book.
Aniko, A-N-I-K-O, the Stranger Who Loved Me. Because anyway, when I was 5, this man turned up in our lives. And he paid me no attention. And instead of being the center of my mother's existence, apart from her job, which took up about 18 hours a day, but I was her sunshine. When she was with me, she was happy. He replaced me. How dare he? So I fought a battle against him. He wasn't actually physically abusive. He couldn't be, because my mother wouldn't have stood for that. But he was verbally abusive. Little statements like, protect us from the idiots of the world. If there's a wrong way of doing something, or even if there isn't, he'll do it that way first. And of course, even though I rejected everything about him, I took on his opinions without meaning to.
I often say that it's not logical, it's psychological. So logically and rationally, we say we repudiate these ideas. No, that's not true. And of course, we internalize the identification with the aggressor. We internalize that relationship, and then it becomes from instead of between you and the other person, it's between parts of you. Exactly.
Anyway, I won every battle against him. I could tell you lots of stories about the tricks I played on him. There was a poltergeist in the house, for example, and all sorts of things. And he'd arrive at work with a big ink stain on his shirt or a butter blob on the back of his pants or whatever. But he won the war. In 1956, there was a revolution, and the Iron Curtain developed a rust hole, and he shoved me through it and kept the rest of the family behind. And that was one of the unsurvivable things. My mother survived, had to, because she'd risked her life time and again to save me during the Second World War. But anyway, that was very fortunate because it prevented a murder. Either he was going to murder me or I was going to murder him when I was big enough. But as it turned out, I turned 14 in Australia. I couldn't even read the street signs. But by my second year in school, I was topping the subjects. And in Australia, I encountered lots of angels. I call them my angels, people who showed me a good path, and I chose to model on them. And that's how I became a good person.
Well, thank you for sharing that story of overcoming, I would say, he attempted soul murder as well, because when parents or, you know, step-parents or people in your life treat children in such a way to undermine their sense of self, that's what I think it was Shengold called soul murder. So you're a survivor of attempted murder, I would say. You make the point that major depression is the number one psychological disorder in the Western world, and that traditional therapies are failing people. Totally agree. And as you put it, and I really love this, depression is a way of seeing the world, a way of being. It isn't a disease, a disorder, or a chemical imbalance. It's not something you are or have, but something you do.
Yep. Just like what you were talking about, people resorting to overeating or the other way, you know, anorexia, as a way of trying to, well, misusing something to try and solve a problem. Depression is a habit. Binging out on food is a habit. Habits can be broken. But I don't quite agree that the major therapies are a failure. Cognitive behavioral therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, emotional focus therapy, there are various ones which have very good research base. They do work at controlling a problem. And then there is a well-researched field of positive psychology, which can lead you above normal. Normal is the walking wounded. We can rise above that.
I like the analogy, trite as it is, but so perfect, of the weed and the root. If you only address the weeds, whether it's depression or depression and binging or anxiety, whatever, if you just address that, you will not, you know, it'll keep growing back. You can't pluck a weed and have it not grow back. By the way, I'm hearing from Sharon that my audio and video are not in sync, but if anyone else on Instagram is having that issue, let me know. It may only be your phone, Sharon.
Oh, that's because you're going at above light speed. It's just your remarkable power, you know. The computer can't keep up with you.
Will you want to come live with me in Calabasas? Okay, Kylene hears us both perfectly. Josh, he is a psychologist, and we're here to talk about his book, From Depression to Contentment. Actually, he's written 20 books, but so everyone looks great in sync. All right, so Sharon, I think it's your phone. Sorry about that, Dr. Bob. So you and totally agree that you have to get to what is creating the habit of depression or creating the habit of binge eating or whatever the negative coping strategy is.
Yeah. I think almost invariably, chronic adult suffering of any kind is due to childhood trauma. There is remarkable evidence that trauma that the Child Protection Agency would define as child trauma is in a high percentage of diagnosed mental disorders, so-called. I don't like the term. But trauma for a child is actually what the child perceives as trauma. So something which could be dismissed by an adult, get over it, may have lifelong damage. Like I had a client, when he was a five-year-old boy, his father took him horse riding. He'd never done it before. And he overheard a couple of bigger boys saying, "Oh, Cyril, he's not much good." He wasn't much good at horse riding, a five-year-old who'd never done it before. But he took it in as, "I, the person, am not much good." And that was the start of his depression. When we uncovered that, we could fix it.
Exactly. When you see what's hidden, you can address it. You can't fight an invisible army, but when you make it visible, you can fight back. And there are two kinds of trauma, right? There's big T trauma, the big catastrophic event. And then there's the more common little T trauma, which is 1,000 small cuts versus a one big giant stab wound to your heart. And those 1,000 small cuts, those small cutting remarks that are overheard like that are more painful and more lasting and more traumatic sometimes than the big traumas.
Well, that's what I copped.
Yeah.
But I said that my path out started by modeling on wonderful people. A huge amount of research supports that too. And I used to say my latest novel out, but actually now is the second latest novel out because one came out in October. Is Hit and Run. And in that, there is a boy who hates himself so much, a 14-year-old boy, that he wants to die, but he wants to take as many people with him as he can. They're around, unfortunately. So he steals a car and drives over seven little kids and the crossing supervisor. And he narrowly misses an old lady, and they establish a connection. And then this lady's job that she takes on is to make him into the kind of boy you wouldn't mind your daughter dating. I'm not going to tell you if she succeeds or not, but the book is called Hit and Run, and it shows the power of modeling.
I appreciate that in your novels are psychologically based, obviously, and you talk about all of these things both in your work as a psychologist, but also through your psychological work through novel writing. So you talk about in the book From Depression to Contentment, you talk about the toolkit, right? What is the first tool you use in the toolkit?
In my own personal case, it was forgiving my stepfather. I got really great results at university. My honors thesis actually resulted in a publication, which is not usual. And so my mother and stepfather spent what in terms of the exchange rate was a fortune and temporarily imported me back into Hungary. And so I met him again. I learned his story. And instead of hating him, at first I found I was sorry for him, compassion. And then I got to like him and we became friends. So that was the start of my healing. And actually, forgiveness is the most powerful positive psychology tool there is. The Buddha said anger or any other negative emotion is a hot coal you pick up to throw at someone else. It is your hand that gets burnt. But for other people, when somebody else comes to me, nowadays it's by email, because, you know, I have retired, it is the word, the one word I use for it is metta. St. John in Corinthians 13 talks about love. You should read that. Confucius talks about the same love. You might be surprised to hear. Jesus said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love thine enemies. All the great philosophers and religions have this concept. Now, in English, love is a very fuzzy word. You know, I might love a woman. I might love chocolate. I love little children. They're all very different. I do not love little children the way I love a woman.
That's agave. Agave love is what you're talking about, agape. Agape.
Yeah. Yes. 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 Greek has five different words for what in English is love, and agape is the relevant term. Well, but that's written in English usually with an I on the an E on the end, and that. That's a gape. So that's the confusion. So I go by the Buddhist term, which is metta. And actually, I have a work in progress in which it is central. And so if you go to bobswriting.com/bill/metta.html, you can read all about it.
Well, at the end, we're going to talk about how people can get in touch with you and read your writing. And if anyone wants direct access, you can DM me on Instagram and I will link you up literally with Bob. So your the first tool is forgiveness of others, compassion, and also compassion for self.
Forgiveness of yourself is even more important, especially when you hate yourself. And that's, of course, part of depression. And other things too. You know, if you're quick to be to aggression, the typical cycle is you flash out, you cause some damage, and then you hate yourself for it. So forgiveness of yourself is even more powerful. In my regular meditation, I have a little, I suppose you could call it a prayer, which you have to do with full intention and thinking of specific instances. If any being has caused me hurt in any way, knowingly or unknowingly, accidentally or on purpose, then I send forgiveness. If I have caused harm to any being, accidentally or on purpose, then I ask for forgiveness. The wording doesn't matter. It's, you know, but the concept. I forgive and I ask for forgiveness. And if I've done something stupid, I'll apply it to myself. Because, as you may have guessed, my major trigger for depression used to be making a mistake.
This is a little bit of a side note, but for people who have experienced really egregious trauma, incest, that, you know, things like that, what are your thoughts of forgiveness of the other in those types of situations?
I think in those situations, the first thing you need is to process the trauma. And there are some wonderful research-based tools that work, only they work a little bit like bitter medicine. This is exposure therapies. There are quite a number of kinds. And that means you put yourself in a safe situation and then deliberately re-experience the trauma. And that's frightening. So people go into it and then can't complete it, and then it's even more traumatizing. But if you go through it, it can be like a story told about someone else or something you saw on TV. You can take the pain out of the memory. I know, because I've done it to myself and to many hundreds of clients, or with many hundreds of clients, because a psychologist doesn't actually do anything to a person. I just say, walk along this path. It's been shown to be good for other people. See if it works for you.
I love that, taking the pain out of the memory so that it is not constantly a source of pain that you have to avoid with some bad coping strategy. So what do you tell people who say they are just too depressed to do the things that they know will help them? They're too depressed to eat right, to get enough sleep, to exercise, things like that.
Okay. Whatever depression tells you, do the opposite. Who's in charge anyway? That nasty monster? Not going to push me around. You know, when I was in my late teens, I had a sort of an image that I'm inside a black steel box with no light and no way out. I'm just an empty steel box. And then one day, I reached out a hand and I found that the wall in front of me was a black curtain with sunshine outside. When you take that first step, you realize that you had power all the time. All you have to do is to do it. Okay, I've got some notes on my other computer. That's why I'm looking off to the side. You need to forgive yourself. So today I did whatever depression told me to do, and I was an obedient little slave. And I first need to forgive myself so I don't hate myself even more. There is no such thing as a mistake, fault, or defect. There are only learning opportunities. Suppose one of your listeners, when feeling bad, goes to chocolate. I say, all right, I had some chocolate today. Now, what was it that led me to fail this time? How can I analyze this situation so next time I can do better? Then there's a positive to it. And belief shapes reality. If I believe I can't, I can't. If I believe I can, I can. So you do personal experiments. You say, right, for the next 24 hours, I will not eat chocolate. If you succeed, as you're quite likely to, then you congratulate yourself. And it's a tool for next time. And if you fail and you go back, then you say, right, now, what was it just before I went and had that bit of chocolate? I got that phone call from so-and-so, and that reminded me of such-and-such. That's what I've got to work on.
Yes, it's not what you're eating, it's why. Hmm. And when you get to the why, oh, I got that phone call, it upset me, I went to chocolate, I was trying to cope, but maybe there's a different way of coping. Exactly. Hmm.
And the other realization is, if I have one problem, why should I have two problems? That's a very good relapse prevention tool.
Say more about that. If I have one problem, why should I have two problems?
Well, somebody smokes for 30 years, manages to stop. Then some stress comes on. She goes out. I'm going to buy a packet of cigarettes and I'll just have two problems. Stops it in its tracks. Or suppose she goes to a party and someone offers her a cigarette and she might be a bit tipsy, takes one, starts smoking. Then you say, I stopped a packet a day for 30 years. I can stop one once. Then it's only a glitch. If you say, oh, I'm back to the door, might as well have another one. So if you know you've had a relapse, you've had a relapse. If you know it's only a glitch and I can stop one, then I can stop one.
I love that. Bob, we have Josh on the line, I think, with a question. Hi, Josh.
Hi. Yeah, I do have a question. I've been doing pretty well with my with Dr. Nina's advice on food, and I really haven't used food at all to emotionally. But I was curious. 2 weeks ago, Halloween, I had a sizable meal, I guess, more than normal. And then today or last night, and into today, because I ate the leftovers, I had a lot of food too. And I'm thinking it might just be seasonal, like the SAD, seasonal affective disorder. I can't figure out why I did eat, and maybe it's fine, but I don't know. I don't know what's going on. So,
I really liked your terminology, using food, as in using heroin. That's a very wise way of looking at it. But okay. Well, first, so you had a couple of sleeps, so what? You've been managing things pretty well for a while. Like I said, slip once, slip twice, so what? I can't work out why, it doesn't matter. I'm simply not going to do it again. And forgive yourself and do better next time. It's not a big deal. It's just a habit.
Yeah.
Look. I've got a bad habit that when I get enthusiastic when I'm talking to someone, I cut them off. I've been trying very hard not to do that with Nina. If I do, what's the point of bashing myself up? There's two problems. I'll have a bruised head. Has that helped?
Yeah, I think... I like how you allowed me to be, you allowed me to, look at it the way I was looking at it, which is I can do better. But at the same time, you're saying it's okay. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's okay to slip up. So, yeah.
Look, at the moment, I'm in a project. The Australian elections are coming up, and I belong to the Australian Greens, which is the only sane political party in Australia that's not bought by the fossil fuel industries. And I want the children of the world to survive. So I've spent many hours letterboxing, and so my bike riding exercise has slipped by. And I managed to go bike riding yesterday, and my performance was considerably slower than usual. I could have bashed myself up over that. It's okay. At least I did it. So, next time you sit down to a meal, you can think of the Pilgrim Fathers who first came from England to America. They had a habit of, when eating, stopping when they felt they could eat just a little bit more. They didn't eat to fullness. And as a result, they all had long lives, and they weren't necessarily fun people to be with, mind you, but they were physically healthy. So you could work on a habit. Next time I sit down to a meal, I will have 10% as much as I feel I want. 10%
right. So,
less. Well, you don't reduce 10% less each time or you'll starve to death. But just have 10% less than you think you want.
Yeah, I think being hungry is okay. you know, we survived at some point, our ancestors survived not knowing when we would get our next meal. And that didn't seem to hurt us too much. Is that what you're saying? I mean, it's okay to be a little hungry.
You don't have to be hungry. We in the West are in the habit of eating too much. But look, there is one very powerful tool. It's the strongest tool of cognitive behavioral therapy called the ABC diary. You could use that. A stands for antecedent or trigger or what's before. B stands for behavior, which in this case is eating more than 90% of what you think you want. And C is consequence. So you set out a table with four columns. And this could be on your phone or in a little notebook. I mean paper notebook. And the first one is date, time, circumstances. The second one you might be monitoring a thought that leads to overeating or maybe how busy you are or whatever, some trigger. The third one is eating more than I decided I would. And then the fourth column is the emotional consequence. Now, when you use an ABC diary, it's magic. If you're monitoring you want more in your life of, then it grows. If you monitor something you want less in your life, it shrinks. And that's because of the searchlight of attention. Instead of being caught up in the habit, you become the observer of the habit. You're one step back, so you've taken the emotion out of it. And that's why it works.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Try that out, and you can go to my blog and send me a message about it.
Yeah, and I was Nina will tell you.
So I'm sorry. Here, I cut you off.
I was just going to say that I was going to go into maybe an unconscious, you know, traumatic event. But I didn't need to have to do that. You sort of just walked me right past it, which I like.
It's not,
who wants to remember,
it's not always necessary
who wants
to remember
go to trauma basic causes. From their childhood, you know.
Look,
you know,
for some reason,
we don't want to be re-traumatized, you know.
Yeah. For some reason, people establish a habit. Someone might start picking his nose. Maybe because there was a bit of an infection there and that helped. And then after a while, it just becomes a habit. The infection is long gone, but the horrible habit is still there. Doesn't matter why it started, we can get rid of it. An ABC diary would be a perfectly good way of stopping that because it converts you into an observer.
Yeah, thank you very much. I feel like there's a way to love yourself a little bit better. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying, and I really appreciate it.
Mm.
Thank you, Josh. Yes, it's always better to approach life from a place of being compassionate and supportive of yourself. It's amazing how much things change when you take that stance with yourself rather than abandon yourself. So let us know how it goes and get in touch with Dr. Bob. Keep him posted.
Yes, I'll be interested.
I have also a question from Carly Gash. She says, Dr. Bob, what is your opinion on EMDR for erasing past memories?
You don't erase past memories. The memory stays. It's the pain that goes. To some extent and some of the time anyway. I can have a relapse, but it'll last 10 seconds instead of weeks. Now, I mean, I'm now 78 and three quarters. I got out of depression when I was 43. So it's been a while, but I can still have a brief slip back. But EMDR is one of the exposure therapies, and it has good research evidence. I'm a scientist. I do everything by looking at the evidence for it. But the finger waving or equivalent, in my opinion, is actually unnecessary. What is necessary, what it has in common with other exposure therapies, is you're in a safe space, you know you're in a safe space, and you deliberately re-experience the trauma time and again, as many times as necessary, from 2 to 20.
With a and safe person.
And I can explain it in theoretical terms, but I don't think that's necessary.
And the presence of the person with whom you are experiencing that trauma is also vital. It's not just that you're in a safe space, right? You're with a safe person, and often being with a safe person can really heal the original trauma.
Except I did it for myself. And if you read my book, if you read my book From Depression to Contentment, I describe how to do that. It is much better with a helper, much easier, but you can do it yourself. And also, I've got a novel, Ascending Spiral, because that's my autobiography, fictionalized. It's fictionalized for two reasons. One is to protect the guilty. I don't want to be sued. And the second one is, there's a very powerful psychological tool from acceptance and commitment therapy, which is you write a film script. It hasn't got a plot at this stage. You don't know what's going to happen in the future, but it has a main character. And you design this character with great detail, in my case here, but this person has your exact physical appearance and your exact history. And then, of course, having designed the character, you step in and then you act it. The only difference is that this character in that movie handles your life choices from your past the way you wish you had. Okay? So where I made a mistake, my hero in the book, Pip, handles it better so I can learn from him. So if I encounter a similar situation in the future, I can handle it like Pip instead of like Bob. Anyway, in that also, I describe, because it's fictionalized, it's slightly different, a different version of how I handled my own trauma.
Well, that's another one of your 19 books that we got to pick up. Carly Gash, Sam, I'm getting a message from Carly Gash that she's calling, but it's not going through. Oh, maybe here she is.
Hello?
Hi, Carly Gash. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Nina. Do you hear me well?
We hear you well.
Awesome. Hi, Dr. Bob, and thank you so much for this amazing life. I have a question to Dr. Bob. You said that you conquered your depression at the age of 43. And my question is, how do you feel right now? How did you live this years past 43? What was your energy level? And you speak about contentment. How do you feel contentment, and how does it express itself in life?
Okay, well, I could talk for, say, 3-4 hours about all this, but maybe one thing helps is to distinguish contentment from happiness. Suppose I have a severe pain, and nevertheless, I use my tools to feel content with life. I'm not happy about the pain, but I can live in contentment. All right? Contentment is a steady state, or lack of contentment. I have a friend who, at quite an early age, suffered a stroke. At first, he couldn't move, couldn't speak. Then the first word he managed was, "No!" Which showed his inner strength, right? He now lives independently. But he's got a dragging foot, and one arm, which is, you know, chicken wing. Is he happy about that? No. But he lives a good life. When my mother and stepfather got me to paid for me to visit them. The cheapest way was on a cruise ship. That was much cheaper than aeroplanes in those days. And on this cruise ship was a band, and they had a signature tune. And those 6 weeks from Australia to Greece were the most miserable 6 weeks of my life. And so that signature tune of theirs became a trigger. If I thought of the tune, I'd crash. If I crashed for any reason, the tune would start playing in my mind. When I was 43, I was going to have a really great day, hopped in the shower, and in the shower, suddenly the tune started playing in my mind. And I stayed happy. That's when I realized I've got this bugger beaten. As to how, during the 20 years between 23 and 43, I started doing things for myself, you know, try something, see how it goes, or not even think about it, just do it. And later on, a great many of these were researched and used as positive psychology tools. So that's what happened. In my two books on depression, and in many of my fictional books, these tools are there, used, either explained, in Lifting the Gloom. That's a bit of a fun book. That's my second last book to be published. I have stories, short stories of various kinds, ranging from 100 words to about 8,000. And then a bit of a discussion of each. And these show the positive psychology tools in use.
Bob, I have to share a poem that you wrote that's in a short poem that really illustrates the idea of perspective. You know which one I'm going to do? A little bird went flying by. As I wiped it from my eye, I said, "Thank heavens cows don't fly."
Well, I didn't write that. The great author Anonymous did. Anonymous has written lots of poems, stories, music.
Well, Anonymous is in. Anonymous then is it makes an appearance in from depression.
Anyway,
contentment.
I'm sorry. The first line is, as I looked up at the sky, a little bird went flying by. As I wiped it from my eye, I said, "Thank heavens cows don't fly." Now, this is illustration of the positive tool, the silver lining. Perspective. But it's important. It's not denial. It's not Pollyanna. Oh, everything is so good in the world. It's not like that. The poet did get the plop in the eye. Just thank heavens it wasn't worse. I used to have chronic pain in my right hip. I didn't know it, and I was too stubborn to ever get an X-ray, but I had a stalactite growing in the hip, pushing the bone out, which is not a good idea. So, you know, I'd be working 9-10-hour days and had the pain, but I used my tools to handle it. I might just have a slight digression. There's a man called John J-O-N Kabat-Zinn, who's devised a method for mindfulness pain management. And that's what I teach my clients for handling both emotional and physical pain. And I use it on myself. But I remember one night I went to sleep and on my gratitude list was, "Thank heavens, today the pain never went above 7 out of 10. So that's what you're talking about. Very powerful.
Carly Gash, does that answer your question?
I honestly couldn't get a grasp of what was said.
I'm sorry.
I can re-listen to it and try to make sense of it. Because even with this perspective for the bird. I personally don't think that for me it will be enough to think that things that got cows don't fly, because for me it's not satisfactory comparison. I would rather go and understand how the world works, why birds are there, that they're important part of biology, and they help in things, and then understand it, and then I will be content or something. Like yes. This, you know, this works my brain better. Just simply because I had, you know, Hungary, I'm from Kazakhstan, and Hungary, I know that we have some historic background of being like same DNA or something. And in my country, people also say that, oh, things got cows don't fly, but it was never enough for me. That's why I'm looking for other answers, because in my case, it doesn't work. My brain is not satisfied with those answers. So I'm just looking for tools which will help me, you know, to come to terms with not depression, but like, I guess, make sense of this world and come to terms with things which I don't like and with the pain in the past, but more in a, I guess, more organic and hopeful working way. Because I've heard those things in my country that, you know, we, Kazakhstan is also a tremendously survivor country. We survived basically genocide. Nobody's talking about. And we are like pretty strong people. And I heard those things like, oh, focus on this, on that, and that. But like you said, Dr. Nina, depression is for Western countries. And I'm living in a Western country now. But I was already like, being a kid in Kazakhstan, I was already pretty aware of what's going on. And that made me sad. So I guess I'm looking for...
We only have a few more minutes, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to ask Dr. Bob a question that might actually help you more.
Well, I would just like to say, nothing works for everyone. Some of my tools will not work for you, but others will. But something works for everyone. Nothing works for everyone, but something works for everyone. So you look at a toolkit, you don't pick up a hammer to put in a screw. If putting a positive spin on things doesn't work for you, that's fine. You may use another tool. And you mentioned one of forgiving the bird, because birds are so wonderful. Birds are among my favorite people on this planet.
Dr. Bob,
and the poor bird didn't actually try to bomb me. It was just an accident. I forgive the bird.
That's the thing, Dr. Bob. I don't forgive the bird. I don't believe in forgiveness. And I agree. Thank you for telling that. I need to find my own toolbox. Thank you for that. Because sometimes I feel bad when some tool is not like, doesn't find reflection in me. Like I don't feel like connected to it, but thanks for mentioning that. I actually can go and find those things which work for me. Not necessarily all of them have to work for me, but I need to.
Exactly.
I will go ahead and find what works for me. But I never spoke about forgiving the bird. What I did meant is this understanding that this how the world works, more from like biological, realistic perspective, and like finding the right place for myself as a human species, and understanding that bird is a part of nature and they make an important function. They help in, like, you know, in cross, what do you call it? When they, you know, they help in some birds
part
help
of the,
in
part of the cycle
grow,
of
yeah,
life.
Yes, in plants.
But, you know,
it's all ecosystem.
There is a story about this little bird. It was pecking at the grass, and then a cow plopped on it. And it was terrible. And it struggled and got out. And when it got out, it was so thankful it started singing, and a cat pounced on it and ate it. So maybe getting out of the crap is not always the best solution.
Well, I'm sorry, we're actually almost out of time. What I wanted to just briefly address was that developing resilience is one of the weapons in your arsenal to combat depression, and developing I know we have like less than a minute, but if you could just say a couple of words about resiliency as
well. I could talk for an hour or two about that. Shinto, the original religion of Japan, has a saying which I've adopted as one of my cliches. There are many mountains to God and many paths up each mountain. So I have a dozen tools for building up resilience, and any collection of them will work.
And you can find any of them.
Would you like me to just give one?
Sam, can we go over a little bit? Okay, give one.
Yeah, okay. Old lady, lady suffered a car smash. She could have died, very strong multiple injuries. After eventual rehabilitation, on the way home, she saw a big truck with calves being taken to market. And she stopped the car, got out, talked to the driver, and bought those calves because she's a farmer. And she explained to me it was because she wanted to have an external obligation. Never mind how much pain I'm in, never mind how tired I am, I now have to feed those calves twice a day. And that's what helped her to recover fully.
I love that story. And I'm so glad that you were able to join us here from Australia, where it is like, 6-7 in the morning. So I know you got up super early to be with us here today. Thank you. Please tell us, how can people find you?
Okay. If you put Dr. Bob Rich bobbing around in a blog, in a search engine, I'll come up. But the actual link is bobrich18.wordpress.com. And I have a contacts page there so you can leave me a message. And I'd like to say a couple of commercials. If you buy any of my books and in any format, you've earned yourself a free electronic book of any of the other titles, unless I gave the book for you for free. I'm not that old yet that I'll forget. And the second one is my book, Lifting the Gloom, is available for free to anybody who follows my blog or subscribes to my newsletter.
Wonderful. Well, and if anyone wants to reach Dr. Bob, you can also contact me and I will give you the link to reach him directly. So thank you, Dr. Bob Rich. It was a pleasure having you on the show today, all the way from Australia. We appreciate your wisdom and your inspiration, and hopefully one day you'll come back, maybe at not quite such an early hour.
I'll be happy to. I can talk about something entirely different.
That would be
after
great.
After all, I'm a storyteller.
You're hereby invited back.
And a grumpy old man.
Yeah, not so grumpy.
Well, people laugh at what they say, not because I have a sense of humor, but because they have a sense of humor.
And that is a beautiful way to end our show today. Thank you again, and thank you, everybody. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. Have a beautiful week. I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.